Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff with Chase Palmieri. On today's program, we look at social media censorship, recent purges of U.S.-based independent media under the guise of political disinformation. For the hour, we'll be discussing online and internet censorship. Our guests include Manar Mahawish of Mint Press News and Patty Beers of The Anti-Media. Please stay with us. Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff in studio with Chase Palmieri. On today's program, we're going to be looking at censorship online. A very recent story involved Facebook purging U.S.-based independent media, calling it spam, political disinformation. And we have with us today a returning guest. We're very delighted, in fact, to have her return to the program, because her news outlet was one of the ones that was writing about this issue as soon as it happened, October 12. And Manar Mahawish, Chase Palmieri, is going to properly introduce you. So, Chase?
Manar Mahawish is founder, CEO, and editor-in-chief of Mint Press News, and is also a regular speaker on responsible journalism, sexism, neoconservatism within the media and journalism startups. She started her career as an independent multimedia journalist covering Midwest and national politics while focusing on civil liberties and social justice issues, posting her reporting and exclusive interviews on her blog, Mint Press, which she later turned into Mint Press News, the global news source it is today. In 2009, Mahawish also became the first American woman to wear the hijab to anchor and report the news in American media. Manar, thanks for joining us again today on the show.
Thank you so much.
So, Manar, mintpressnews.com. Of course, Project Censored listeners are not new to you or your work. You've been in our books. You've been on our show. We've done events together. You will be at the Media Freedom Summit at College of Marin coming up here October 26 and 27. You're one of the keynote people Friday night the 26th, and you certainly have a lot to say. So let's whet people's appetite here today on the Project Censored show. October 12, Whitney Webb, writing for your website, wrote about the Facebook purges. So tell us about this. Facebook announced that it was removing more than 800 pages from its platform, accusing the pages of, quote, inauthentic behavior, even though the pages produced legitimate content. So writes Whitney Webb at mintpressnews.com. So, Manar, let's talk about this.
Yeah, so October 12th, we're calling it the Facebook purge, the purge day. When Facebook basically announced that they were purging, deleting the pages of over 800 independent media outlets, several activist pages as well. And they basically, Facebook basically accused these pages of producing clickbaity headlines and not following the Facebook rules that they have, being spam and spamming users. When if you take a look at what most of these pages have been producing, some of the top ones we look at are like Anti-Media, the Free Thought Project, writers like Rachel Blevins, and then other activists like Nick Burnaby, Carrie Wedler. The purge first began on Facebook, then it followed again as if at a coordinated effort on Twitter. And if you look at these pages, those specific ones, they produce a lot of anti-establishment news. They are watchdog journalism. They're independent media. Yes, they are for profit, but so is like BuzzFeed and Huffington Post and all of these other news organizations that are tweeting and posting things online. And what's really ironic is that Facebook got rid of these pages because they were so-called spamming users. I mean, if they really, really cared about spam, I mean, you'd think that they would go after organizations like BuzzFeed, where most of their news is spam and really annoying and, you know, cat videos and so forth. So it's no coincidence that they targeted these organizations. These organizations produce a lot of independent watchdog-style journalism and blog posts. They provide a lot of coverage on the national security state, on the police state, and the war machine. They're very anti-interventionist. They're not necessarily right or left. Look at their coverage. Most of these pages are nonpartisan, and they basically promote a pro-peace, anti-establishment message that is very similar to what we do at Mint Press or what you guys do at Project Censored. So there's definitely, it's definitely not a coincidence that those pages were targeted.
So, Manar, when you say that these pages were purged, can we get a little bit more specific? Are these pages removed completely from Facebook? Are they temporarily banned? What is the actual result for the audience on Facebook?
They were removed. They were deleted off of Facebook, and they were suspended off of Twitter. So you can't access their Facebook pages. You can't access their Twitter pages. Facebook has not provided an answer or response to them when they tried to appeal. I think all of the pages that I mentioned had tried to appeal to get their pages back because many of these pages had several millions of followers. They were very, very influential. Whenever they posted something, a lot of their articles would go viral. I mean, I know the Freethought Project, one of the last articles that they had posted right before their page was taken down was about police brutality, and it had almost reached nearly a million people, which is a lot on Facebook. So now they've been completely removed, and the users, people that went and clicked like, that chose to follow those pages, don't have access to those pages anymore.
Right, and I see one of the organizations or pages that was removed was Police the Police, which I've been a fan of and following for a long time. Were all of these pages also removed from Instagram, which is owned by Facebook?
I believe at first they were only removed from Facebook, then I think Twitter followed, and then I believe Instagram followed as well. Instagram is also owned by Facebook, yes.
So, Manar Mahawish, I just wanted to chime back in here. According to the article, Free Thought Project, 3.1 million likes, Antimedia, 2.1 million, Cop Block, 1.7 million, Police to Police, 1.9 million. These are sites that have been disappeared. And again, in the article, this is something that we talked about last month on the Project Censored show. We had a whole program on First Amendment issues, free press issues, so-called deplatforming. You know, first they came for Alex Jones. Well, of course, first they came for lots of people. Alex certainly wasn't the first, but certainly Alex was a big tree in that forest in terms of controversial websites, InfoWars, who actually was known for publishing mis and disinformation and was almost a performance artist, according to his own attorney. But again, you know, when we had this conversation, you know, we still talked about the significance of free expression and why censorship can be a very, very slippery slope. And it didn't take long until now, these social media sites are able to see, well, not too much of an outcry over dropping Jones, so maybe we can go after these other sites. And I said, again, these are a lot of anti-establishment or far-right, far-left sites. These are far outside the field of so-called mainstream establishment politics. But the reasoning, some of these sites have received some reasons, and they include spam, they include violating community standards. Those are obviously vague things as well. But in your case, what I wanted to talk about, since you and Chase were just talking about Instagram, you actually had some direct issues with Instagram, and you were writing about, well, why don't you tell the story?
Right. The day of the purge, not only were pages like Cop Lock and Police the Police and Anti-Media and Free Thought and several other activist pages removed, but they had actually targeted several of our posts on Instagram and other pages' posts as well on Instagram the day of the purge and flagged them as inappropriate. For instance, we had published a cartoon by the very brilliant and internationally renowned cartoonist Carlos Latouf from April, and it was flagged the day of the purge on October 12th for inappropriate symbols. And what this cartoon had brilliantly depicted was an Israeli sniper with the Israeli flag. The sniper was targeting a journalist covering Israel's massacre in Gaza during the Great Return March. And so here we are as journalists, as the media, portraying and illustrating for the public the crimes that are being committed against humanity in Gaza. And instead of maybe purging like sites, you know, we don't want any purging to take place, but just ironically, instead of flagging pages like Benjamin Netanyahu, who promotes racism and apartheid on his Facebook and Twitter page, they're going after real, actual journalism that's holding the establishment accountable. And in this case, it was holding apartheid Israel accountable for its crimes in Gaza. And what's really interesting about this whole purge, and I've heard a lot of people say this, is that Instagram's a private entity, and so is Twitter. But the real deal is sure, they may be a corporation, but the government has outsourced its spying machine and its censorship machine to Facebook and to these social media giants so that, you know, because the First Amendment issue, even though the government probably doesn't matter whether it's the First Amendment issue or not, as we know, you know, we're being spied on anyways. to be the national security state. But now they've outsourced these First Amendment right issues to these organizations. You know, they're getting basically the full freedom to censor and do whatever they want to under the banner of spamming or clickbait headlines, and it's hurting our business and hurting other businesses.
Manar, we've been talking a lot on the show in the last few weeks about whether or not these platforms should be considered as digital town squares and therefore regulated in some way. But I do have a question for you. Is the timing of this purge as it leads into the midterm significant, or is it in some way unfair to blame Facebook for the timing since they're being told by Congress to act in advance of U.S. elections?
No, there's no coincidence, and I do believe that the midterm elections are playing a huge role in when this purge took place. I mean, we're talking about pages that have several millions of followers that are very influential online. If you've been paying attention, Mint Press, Free Thought Project, and Anti-Media were blacklisted when we were targeted in a list by Propernot, which is like this hawkish, McCarthyist arm of the Atlantic Council, right after the 2016 election. And we were targeted and listed as Russian bots that were influencing the 2016 election in favor of Trump and against Hillary Clinton. So basically we got blamed, and also Truthdig was on there. And several other, you know, very far-right organizations and some, yes, indeed, fake news organizations. But then they also kind of clumped us in there. And so we were targeted and blacklisted right after the 2016 election. So I do not find it coincidental at all that right now, right before the elections and right after that congressional hearing, that the Atlantic Council, a hawkish, NATO-funded, Saudi-funded, Israeli-funded, U.S. government-funded pro-war organization that has partnered up with Facebook, who blacklisted us, is now targeting these organizations, including Mint Press. We haven't been purged yet. We're a social media partner with Anti-Media, and we work with some of the people that were purged. So that's why it hit so close to home to us. We haven't been purged yet, but we have a very strong feeling that we will be purged because we were on that list, and so are other independent media organizations. So there's no question, there's no doubt that this is not a coincidence that it's ahead of the 2018 midterm election.
So Manar, you're saying that you fully expect Mint Press News to also be purged in the coming weeks or months?
I have a feeling that it could happen to us. I don't know for sure, but the reason why I have that feeling is that this latest purge is not the first purge. Yes, sure, we did have the Alex Jones purged off of social media, but Facebook has been slowly but surely purging smaller organizations. I have been contacted by a number of pages and activists that have had their pages removed without warning from Facebook over the last year. So they've slowly but surely been doing this. This time, I think the timing made the story a lot more interesting, and also we've been giving it a little bit more attention. But I do think that the purge is coming in cycles. This is not the first nor the last purge that's going to take place. And I have a feeling that Mint Press, Truthdig, possibly a lot of the other independent and alternative media will be purged. Next time, maybe they'll just say it outright that we're informing people that we're causing too much dissent in this country.
Manar Mahawesh, Mint Press News. That language was used in the summer regarding Alex Jones. In fact, WikiLeaks even tweeted, quote, "The empire strikes back. Apple, Spotify, Facebook, and Google, YouTube all purge InfoWars Alex Jones. Yes, InfoWars has frequent nonsense, but also a state power critique. Which publisher in the world with millions of subscribers is next to be wiped out for cultural transgression?" Well, that's a pretty great question, and it looks like it's just been answered in the last week or so over at Facebook. And Caitlin Johnstone, who writes a lot about these things from Australia, actually wrote about the corporatist system of government, and corporate sponsorship then can't really be seen as completely separate from state censorship, given the outsourcing that you meant prior. But now this is going to make things quite sticky. It's a really complicated potential First Amendment issue regarding a free press, which says Congress shall make no laws, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly.
Right? And so this is, again, the gray area. Your response to that?
I think I'm going to have to agree with you. I mean, that's exactly what's happening. I think Chase had mentioned, can there be regulation or so forth of these corporations? I don't have the answer to that. But this is the definition of corporatism right here, where corporations are working hand in hand with the U.S. government to outsource the kinds of things that the U.S. government knows it can't get away with right away. And so we are now a victim to this kind of corporate state of control. We're turning more and more into an Orwellian state, and it's really, really frightening.
I'd like to remind listeners, you're tuned to the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff with Chase Palmieri. We're speaking with Manar Mahawish of Mint Press News about internet censorship. We'll be back after this musical break to continue our conversation with Manar Mahawish. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff with Chase Palmieri. On today's program, we're talking about internet censorship, including the recent purge, as it's been referred to by Facebook, of over 800 sites of activists and other journalistic organizations or political organizations. We're speaking now with the founder of Mint Press News, mintpressnews.com, Manar Mahawish. And Manar, Mint Press News, of course, has been a target of some of these big tech platforms. And of course, you mentioned Instagram earlier before the break and how one of your posts about an editorial cartoon from a reputable cartoonist was censored because of its critique of the Israeli occupation of Palestine. And so whether or not one agrees or disagrees with that kind of message, that's entirely legitimate political perspective that people have the right to hear and express. And so that is the kind of thing that is going along sort of baby with the bathwater. We mentioned, you know, of course, Alex Jones and some of these other arguably troublesome sources that had been purged. And so people say, well, I don't mind if that goes away. But what's going to happen when something like Mint Press goes away? What's going to happen when you mentioned earlier Truth Dig or Truth Out or our friend Dave Lindorf, this can't be happening, or Counterpunch? I know you mentioned Prop or Not, and we're probably going to get into Prop or Not with PM Beers, our next guest, because the site she was working at, Antimedia, that's been purged. And at Project Censor, we wrote a lot about Prop or Not. But I wanted to come back to that issue because of the outsourcing of intelligence. I mean, we know that Silicon Valley, big tech firms, we know that there's a lot of surveillance money coming through the government that's going into these big tech firms. We know there's no real firewall between Intel and military industrial complex and the surveillance and tech firms. You'd mentioned the Atlantic Council. It's the arm of NATO, propaganda arm of NATO. They're one of the organizations that's deciding what's fake news. The Weekly Standard, which is a right-wing publication. Nothing wrong with a right-wing publication, per se, but certainly not the kind of organization you'd go to, nor NATO as any objective arbiter of facts and journalism.
Absolutely, and that's who we're seeing right now being the fact-checkers. And before they came along, we had organizations like the Washington Post and BuzzFeed being assigned as fake news checkers for Facebook as well. So it slowly has evolved into basically putting who controls our news into the hands of the war machine, of the very organizations that media and journalism is supposed to be holding accountable. Well, now they are the ones who are basically playing thought police in America. And so it's a really, really dangerous slope. Facebook is being nicknamed Fascist Book because now they're acting as a fascist organization where they're trying to control what people see, hear, and read. And if we are all purged, I mean, what's going to be left? We are going to be left with organizations like the Weekly Standard or BuzzFeed or Washington Post or Huffington Post or CNN as the ones who are going to be providing our news. And who are those? I mean, those organizations are the corporate mainstream media spewing and promoting the very lies that bring us the war. They're the ones who are dehumanizing the victims of our war. They're the ones who are convincing us that our water is safe to drink, our food is okay, GMOs, non-organic food is okay. They're the ones who are propagating for the establishment on a daily basis. And so if we're gone, no one's going to be holding them accountable. So I think the time is now where we need to come up with an alternative. The biggest challenge we've had in moving to alternative platforms like WeMe or Minds or other, you know, social media organizations or platforms that don't believe in censorship and they're more independent is that while we move, the users are not moving. And so people are so addicted to going on Facebook. They're so addicted to going on Twitter and on Instagram and these major platforms because we are surrounded with these platforms everywhere we go. I mean, we know that we're going to get all of our news from Facebook, in which now they're going to be controlling. They're controlling our news. And so I think the next question is how can we find and build a new alternative where people can go and feel like they're getting the kind of news that they deserve? Another question I have is how do we get more and more people to care? I think when Alex Jones was purged, I think that was kind of used as a, well, Alex Jones is crazy, so we need to support censorship. You know, that's how Facebook and these organizations got the public to support censorship, because they took somebody who is literally like an actor providing pure entertainment, who's spewing lies and fake news and just entertainment, not real news, and he was banned. They almost made it like it's okay to do that, so now not as many people care.
Fighting fake news is the Trojan horse for censorship. Right. So now these platforms can say, well, we've been told that we got to get rid of these fake news sites. And then they throw 800 of them together. Now, granted, some of them were duplicates. Some of them are 40 sites run by one person. So maybe, yes, maybe that is spam. Maybe that is something that needs to be addressed. Again, we've been writing about this for the last couple of years. And here we are, more fever pitch than ever about it. There's numerous of these kinds of sources that are being purged or being deplatformed that are, whether you agree with them or not, they're legitimate journalistic outlets. They may have unpopular ideological perspectives, but they are legitimate historical ideological perspectives nonetheless.
Yeah, and Minar, when Facebook makes a decision to purge these pages, they claim that the pages in some way violated the community's terms of service. Now, I'm wondering if you've and your team have looked into this at all, whether or not this is actually a decision being made at the top of all of these tech platforms. Like, is it Zuck himself making the call? Because I don't understand how all of these pages could violate the terms of service overnight.
Well, they did define a couple of the terms of service in an article. I think it was the LA Times. These pages had violated the terms of service by spamming and using clickbait headlines.
When is CNN going to get shut down?
Exactly.
When will Fox News go away?
Exactly. And I don't have it out for BuzzFeed on purpose, but I really believe BuzzFeed is like one of the main spammers that we have that exists in the media today. But what's really ironic is Facebook is making it nearly impossible for any page to reach their own followers. And if you actually look back at Facebook tweets, we actually uncovered a tweet from, I believe, 2 years ago where Facebook admitted that they were suppressing the reach of independent organizations and certain organizations by 80%. They were suppressing their reach by 80%. So here we are, we have this scenario where Facebook is suppressing all of us by 80% because we know we're being flagged for the kind of coverage that we're providing by covering war, by covering the police state, by covering the national security state, et cetera, et cetera. And then they make it nearly impossible when these websites, anti-media or Free Thought Project, try to enhance their articles and their titles to get more attention on Facebook. Facebook is using that as the reason. But if you actually look at another article that just came out right after the purge from the New York Times, it blatantly stated that these pages were being targeted, and it was celebrating it, by the way.
So, Minar, I want to go back to that, proper not, and we're going to be talking about that, of course, probably in the second half of the show, but that goes back to national security editor Craig Timberg, Marty Baron, the senior editor there. They published this article putting proper not on the map, didn't tell anybody who they were, where their funding was, what their methodology was. And, you know, if you go to see their website now, is it propaganda or not, propernot.com, their tagline is your friendly neighborhood propaganda identification service since 2016. And they have a big headline that says, Russia is manipulating U.S. public opinion through online propaganda. Well, perhaps that's partially true, but how is that more relevant than the 24/7 six corporations that run 90% of the media blasting at the American electorate year-round? Again, this is a real bait and switch. This is also why now that they have this fake news meme off-leash and you have people like Donald Trump screaming about fake news every time he doesn't agree with something, right? So you've got a whole contingent of people that are going to jump on fake news that way, a whole bunch of people that are going to say Trump just doesn't want to face the truth in a post-truth world. This is kind of a crazy, chaotic stew that almost appears as though that it was designed on purpose so that someone could come in and correct the problem that was created, and the correctors of these problems then are supposedly the social media platforms that helped exacerbate them in the first place, where they don't share transparency with how they're doing it. They have what look like autocratic fascist purges, something that we would see in Saudi Arabia, for example. But yet this is supposed to be for the good of our press. This is supposed to be, as you and Chase were saying earlier, coming up on the midterm elections, right? Like this is somehow a response to trying to maintain the integrity of our free press system. Well, does it seem to you, Minar, that that's something that should be monitored or argued in the first place? How much of a free press system do we actually have in the U.S.?
If anything, not only does this expose how little freedom of the press we do have, but also shows the irony of this whole Russiagate narrative. I mean, move over Russia, here comes Facebook meddling in the United States election, you know, playing thought police. When the media talks about Russian bots influencing the election, we have organizations like Facebook doing exactly that. They are literally controlling what people see and hear and read in terms of news and what they know about the whole election. It's really, really disturbing. In the past 20 years or so, the media has consolidated to such a point, to such a degree, that the news that we get is already controlled by six corporations, like you said. They control over 90% of what we see, hear, and read. And so we had this opportunity. With every crisis, there comes an opportunity. The opportunity came for so many independent and alternative media organizations to erupt, you know, to have a renaissance, to inform the public. And the establishment got terrified with the rise of all these independent and alternative media organizations, because we weren't getting most of our traffic from Facebook. And the majority of our traffic and our rise was coming from Facebook, was coming from Twitter. And so they saw that Twitter and Facebook was a huge threat. And so they know that they had to kind of squeeze us exactly where what we were utilizing.
So, Minar, let's assume that in 3 weeks, Facebook purges Mint Press News from Facebook. What kind of decisions are you going to have to make to still get your content out to your audience? And are you going to have to scale back operations at your own organization? Are you going to have to let people go because now you're not getting the traffic that you used to?
Or will you take legal action?
We've actually had this conversation at Mint Press for the past 2 years. First of all, our readership in itself has gone down since the whole war on fake news and targeting Russian propaganda and so forth was announced right after the 2016 election. Once Facebook began targeting and flagging and suppressing independent and alternative media, our readership in itself has gone down by over 60% from Facebook. And we were getting the majority of our news from Facebook and from Google as well, and our views from YouTube. And so we're not waiting for 3 weeks. We have been discussing this literally for the past 3 years. Looking not only at alternative platforms to be promoting our news, but also how we can better and enhance the kind of news that we are producing. We've already scaled back. We've already faced budget cuts because of the suppression. Our ad revenue is down also by over 60% because of Google Ads and them removing ads. I mean, Google is like it's another beast. That's like another story. Google's removing ads from political posts, political articles now, and they're threatening to remove even more ads from our website, and that's happening across the board from independent alternative media as well. So they're really squeezing us at every opportunity that they can, and anywhere that they can, they are squeezing us and hurting us. So we've already scaled down on staff, we've already faced budget cuts because of that, and so now we are at the point where we are trying to figure out how do we move forward, and that's kind of one of the things that I was asking about is, you know, we have to figure out, number one, a new platform where we can thrive and survive. And we have to think more multimedia. This is a David versus Goliath scenario. We are up against these major corporations that have, like, unlimited funding. They're producing content constantly, constantly, constantly. That's everywhere we look. So we have to be really smart and innovative in the ways that we are producing our news. We're already starting to do more videos. We're going to be launching a podcast very soon. And we're scaling down on the quantity that we were producing. I don't know if this is the tactic that other organizations are using, but we're going to be focusing more, instead of on quantity, we're going to be focusing more on quality and using the extra funds that we have to promote the very good work that we're doing. So, for example, something that we've done in the past 6 months is we've kind of axed out a lot of the coverage that we're doing on certain issues to focus more on series reporting, like on what's happening in Yemen. And I feel like that's really, really important that we've done that, because even within the independent alternative media platform, not many people have been giving attention to the genocide that's taking place in Yemen. I mean, there's like 23 million people expected to starve to death by the end of this year. That's like in 2 months.
No, and Minar Mahawish, we talked off air before. I just wanted to interject momentarily. You know, speaking of Saudi Arabia and their slaughter in Yemen with U.S. weapons, quite selective outrage, as we've learned now that Saudi Arabia is admitting through Turkey that they're responsible for the death of Jamal Khashoggi. So again, there's outrage about this, and there should be outrage all over. But you just mentioned Yemen, and that's a topic that's escaped the corporate media in the United States, and U.S.-backed Saudi involvement. That's escaped U.S. media almost entirely.
Absolutely. And if we look at the history of Khashoggi, the journalist, I mean, he is part of the establishment, the national security state of Saudi Arabia, and had very close ties to the CIA. And so it's obviously a tragedy whenever a journalist is killed. But I find it really, really ironic that the entire media establishment is outraged over his death when Saudi Arabia is committing a genocide, like I said, in Yemen, where 23 million people are expected to starve to death by an illegal and inhumane blockade by the end of this year. And I think I've seen like one or two reports from CNN and MSNBC over the last like year on what's happening in Yemen. They're cheerleading U.S. weapon sales to Saudi Arabia. I think it's over $3 billion was the latest weapon sale deal from the Trump administration to the Saudis. And so what we're seeing taking place is like this like elitist outrage over this one journalist who was part of the establishment versus outrage that we should be seeing on what Saudi Arabia is doing in Yemen and in its own country. I mean, Saudi Arabia is like a police state. They're beheading people. They're stoning people. They're crucifying people. I mean, it's 2018. They're crucifying people. They're funding terrorism around the world. Jihadis, they're spreading these Salafist Wahhabi ideology that ignites these terrorist organizations in Syria, in Yemen, Al-Shabaab, in Africa. I mean, they are the ones who are fueling chaos. I mean, they're acting as a proxy for the war machine and as a gravy train for profits for the war machine. So that's where the outrage should be. And that's the kind of coverage that we are bringing at Mint Press. That's the kind of coverage that anti-media has brought attention to the very organizations that were purged. And I think that might also have something to do with the fact that we have been targeted through this suppression campaign.
Manar Mahawish, mintpressnews.com. You can learn more by going to the website. You'll be out here in Northern California, College of Marin, Media Freedom Summit 2.0, Critical Media Literacy for Social Justice, October 26, 27. You're speaking the evening of October 26 with Abby Martin of The Empire Files, Eleanor Goldfield of Act Out, Sarah Lazar of In These Times, Nora Barros-Friedman, Electronic Intifada, a absolutely fantastic all-female lineup for our roundtable keynote, and we'll be honored to have you out here, Manar.
Thank you so much.
Up next on the Project Censored Show, we'll continue your conversation about the internet purge and internet censorship with PM Beers. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff in studio with Chase Palmieri. We continue our conversation about the social media purge that has taken place here recently. We were just speaking with Manar Mahawish at Mint Press News, and we laid out some of the details. We're joined in the second half of the program by Patty Beers. She is actually involved in one or more of the sites that was actually taken down. Patty Beers is a political micro-influencer on Twitter. Has over 33,000 followers when her account was suspended. In 2012, she began live streaming during the Occupy Wall Street movement and continued documenting political protests, actions, events, as well as Los Angeles Police Department commission meetings, city council meetings, and other political gatherings in Los Angeles. Much of her work is focused on police accountability, certainly around brutality around Black lives. She has been an activist with Black Lives Matter. She was a correspondent for OWS Week television program that aired internationally on Press TV. In 2014, she began writing for the Anti-Media and was their social media manager on Twitter. Patty, welcome to the Project Censored Show.
Hey, Mel.
So you have had a busy week dealing with all of the things that have happened regarding Facebook, Twitter, social media. Your account was suspended. Twitter, the Anti-Media was also censored. Can you tell us what's going on here?
I'd really like to know. On Thursday, October 11, in the morning, I heard that 800 pages had been taken off Facebook, and Anti-Media was one of those. That's really upsetting in the first place because that was my job, but these kind of things have been happening in Facebook over a long period of time. So it wasn't that surprising because they kept making it so people couldn't see the posts. So our income had already been cut off. A lot of us were practically volunteering at Anti-Media right before the Facebook thing happened. But then later in the afternoon, just before 4 o'clock, all of my Twitter accounts that I have access to were suspended at once. Over 30 accounts on two different tweet decks. I don't know if people know what a tweet deck is, but it's a way that people can work together. People with different accounts can work together and retweet each other's stuff. And so my tweet deck had 26 accounts on it, and 25 of those were suspended. And I also was part of the Global Revolution Media Collective. They had a bunch of accounts on their tweet deck, and all of their accounts on their tweet deck and accounts that used to be on their tweet deck like a year ago that aren't on there now, all of those accounts were suspended. And now I'm hearing of other people that their Twitter accounts are suspended, and also people who work for Anti-Media. Carrie Wedler from Anti-Media, she's the editor-in-chief of Anti-Media. Her Twitter account was suspended. She rarely even uses Twitter. She said that she would never break any rule, and I believe her integrity on that. And so I don't see why her account was suspended. And other accounts that I barely even use, but I do have access to, like White People for Black Lives Twitter account. White People for Black Lives is connected with Black Lives Matter. They're a group of white people who are supporting Black Lives Matter. And their Twitter account, which I barely ever touched, but just because I had access to it and I had tweeted from it, their account was suspended. I'm kind of thinking, because I'm in the middle of all of this, that some of the accounts, the Twitter accounts were suspended to keep me from tweeting.
You were given a notification?
I did receive the same email that a lot of other people had received from Twitter. And it said that my account was suspended for, I think it said breaking the rule, but it didn't say what the rule was. And that was not given a reason. I've appealed it, and I haven't heard back from them.
Interesting. And the reason that all of the accounts that you are connected with were able to be pulled at the same time, I'm assuming, is because you had the same email, password, and login on all of these different accounts?
No. I have more than one account. They're all in different emails. But then I also have access to other people's accounts.
You have permission to do posting on other people's accounts.
Yes.
You weren't doing something that you're not allowed to do.
This is like working in a team. It's teamwork.
So, Patty Beers, tell us a little bit more on the run up to this. Anything going on at the Anti-Media? Anything going on? Did this just come out of the blue, or were there stages? I mean, I'm not talking about what was going on prior with InfoWars or Alex Jones or the general fake news flap, which we can get into a little bit more if you like. But, I mean, did this just come out of nowhere for Anti-Media and for you in particular?
I would say for me in particular, it came out of nowhere. But for Anti-Media and Facebook pages, it's been a slow progression being suppressed and suppressed. And even back in January, Anti-Media had announced that Twitter had cut their reach by over 90% in January. And then that's when everyone who had worked at Anti-Media were told, we don't know if we can pay you. A lot of us were like, we'll do it for free. I had been paid since then, but like less money, because their revenue was just really destroyed in January. So they were hanging on by a thread, and then this happened.
So what is the situation on the ground at Anti-Media in particular? Does it seem like management might have to let people go? Is the website still going to be around a month from now? How devastating is this blow?
I would say incredibly devastating. Right now, they're still publishing articles, but I don't know if people are getting paid. I don't know if anyone's getting paid. But we've already had this discussion. A lot of people are just kind of volunteering.
So we just had Manar Mahawish, the editor-in-chief of Mint Press News, on as our guest right before you. And we were talking about what it might not be too much of a hypothetical scenario that Mint Press News might be purged from Facebook and other platforms in the very near future as well. It's one thing to ask Manar as a hypothetical, what will you do when this happens? But in the position that you are all in right now, do you feel completely helpless? Is there any recourse?
I don't really see for myself a way out, because a lot of people are talking about like moving to other social media platforms, and I don't really see that as effective at this point, because everyone's on Facebook or Twitter. That's the most effective way to reach people and we're telling the news, so we want people to read the news. As far as moving to other platforms, the kind of platforms that are likely to support free speech and not limit it are also, a lot of those are cesspools for white supremacy. So for someone like me, who's like very radically on the far left, I don't really see other platforms that have enough people for that to be an effective place to put all your energy.
Patty, you're no stranger to activism. You were in a row about filming police brutality a few years ago. You have a background going back both in writing and being an activist. It seems, I'd like to hear your view on this. Does it seem then that that kind of a background is the kind of background that's being profiled here?
Well, all the accounts on Twitter and Facebook, I think what we all have in common, anti-authoritarian perspective. We're all challenging mainstream media narratives. A lot of us are focused on just telling the truth, unfiltered truth, from different perspectives that you won't see from the mainstream. So I think that anti-authoritarianism and that questioning of the government, especially, and probably anti-Hillary, too. I think everyone on that pop or not list was probably anti-Hillary.
Patty, I want to play devil's advocate for 1 second. Let's assume that Facebook is a giant party being held on private property, and you and the anti-media team are in a corner of the party by the water cooler talking about very controversial things. Now, why is it not the case that Facebook could say, okay, well, you're no longer welcome at my party because it's creating some kind of a controversial atmosphere for the rest of my party? Why is that not the case?
Because we're not bothering everyone at your party. The people who want to talk to us are coming to talk to us.
Because they've opted into receiving your content in the first place.
Yeah.
And all those lists of followers, are you able to access that list of followers, or has that disappeared as well?
As far as Facebook, I don't know, but as far as Twitter, no, I cannot.
And you had 30-some thousand?
Over 33,000.
And so you have an appeal into Twitter, correct?
Yeah.
And you said earlier in the conversation you had not heard back.
I have not heard anything.
Have you contacted any legal teams, anybody out there that you know that maybe could escalate this to a bigger conversation? As Chase was just saying here, this came up in the conversation before, and in previous weeks we've been talking about free press rights, free speech rights, the corporate enclosure of the commons, corporate capture of information disseminating institutions, and the very gray area then that is created as a result of this kind of control of information, that on one hand the government isn't technically censoring information. It's a private company that has rules that is trying to deplatform or silence certain views under, well, we can at least say under some sketchy cover. But that seems to be what's happening. And so this is my reason for saying the bringing the legal angle into this is that perhaps it's time to really have a conversation about the nature of these private companies on social media and what they do have the right to do.
Yeah. Are any of these companies that were all purged together organizing and maybe thinking about a class action lawsuit? Is there any kind of coordination amongst the purged parties here as they try to fight back and join forces in doing so?
I really don't know anything about that at this point. And I haven't even gotten to the point of legal action. I'm still hoping. All I want is my Twitter account back. I hope that these big groups like anti-media and other groups, and including Mint Press too, because I'm sure Mint Press has lost a lot of money as well. I hope they get together and do something legally. I have no idea where to start or where to go or where to look.
Well, it's very recent. It was also, again, very calculated. You had, 800 overnight. This is going on for a while. They didn't just wake up one day and decide to purge 800 sites. This is something that they've been doing. And actually, I want to maybe posit the same question to you that Chase asked Manar. Do you think the timing of this, coinciding with the run-up to the 2018 election, with the demand from Congress in particular, that social media needs to take its responsibility more seriously and needs to rout out so-called fake news sites? What's your view on that?
I think that probably is the case, and I think that's hysterical because most of these sites are not even for voting. I'm not for voting for people, so as harshly critical I was of Hillary, I would be harshly critical of any politician because I don't vote for people at all. But yeah, I think that the timing of it, it is about the elections and trying to suppress political dissent. And maybe the motive is to keep the dialogue on the two-party system, people from other alternatives and thinking about other things. And maybe they just want people focused on the Republicans and the Democrats because most of these sites aren't about voting for people.
So PM Beers, Patty Beers, where can people find out or follow more about what's going on here? I know you obviously mentioned you're not on Twitter presently, but could you read out a couple places where people can find you? Maybe do give your Twitter account in case it comes back online. That way, if people are interested, they could contact you, or perhaps somebody in the audience has ideas or suggestions.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm PM Beers on all the social medias.
So that's PMBEERS.
Yes, I'm on Instagram. I have a Facebook public page. People can follow my public page. Anybody can follow me on there. I'm on YouTube as well. A lot of my YouTube videos have little clips from people speaking at the police commission meeting.
TheAntiMedia.com is one of the websites that you were associated
for sure.
With.
Go there.
Okay, well, yeah. Patty Beers, we're going to be doing more programs on this, so I'm sure we'll be checking back in with you in coming weeks just to find out what's going on here. And so, again, keep us posted at Project Censored, and we hope to continue to get out the word about these internet deplatformings as they were and censorship at places like Twitter. That was our conversation with Patty Beers of the Antimedia, antimedia.com. Chase Palmieri and I will continue our conversation about internet censorship issues after this musical break. Stay with us.
You see this woman on a TV show. She's dripping in diamonds from head to toe. They make you believe it's the status quo. You're running with the devil, it's touching you.
Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff in studio with Chase Palmieri. For the last minutes of the program today, Chase and I wanted to have a discussion about this because this issue, internet censorship, information freedom, the right to disseminate information, the right to be heard. Right now, again, I'm riffing on the United Nations Article 19 here, International Declaration of Human Rights. Obviously, Project Censored is a very pro-First Amendment organization, but we mentioned earlier in the program that there's some gray area here, public versus private. And of course, Chase, who is over at tribeworthy.com, who does stuff in media as well. We've had Chase on the program as a guest before. Now he's co-host. Chase and I were talking off air, and there's a few things that we should bring up. And one of these issues, Chase, was...
Well, one of the issues with proposing regulation on big tech social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter is that only these giant, already rich and already having made it platforms can actually comply with these regulations, and that it might stifle competitions and upstarts from coming and stealing these audiences away from Facebook and Twitter and Instagram.
Let's take a look at this then, again, because we know social media CEOs have been hauled in front of Congress with a big finger wag after the 2016 election, right? That a lot of the blame, plenty of blame to go around, whether it was Russia or fake news or Bernie-crats or whatever you want to call this, whatever the blame was, one of them was fake news, one of them was fingering social media in general. Of course, the trope that Russia somehow was able to influence all these votes is I suppose, interesting one, if ever absurd. That doesn't mean that Russia wasn't taking out ads or that the Russian government doesn't have interest in U.S. elections. But realistically, we have a lot of other forces right here at home in the United States that are interested in disseminating propaganda. But the social media companies said that that wasn't what they did, right? The social media companies went to Congress and said, well, we're not journalists. We're not information institutions. We're social platforms. What can you add to that, Chase? What about this argument?
Well, I guess the argument they're trying to make is that they are in some way free and open platform, allowing the people, the guests on their platform, to say whatever they want and then allow the people to opt into that content by these kind of follower-following feature sets. And that seemed to have been the case for a very long time, at least in the early days. But it seems more and more heavy-handed by some of the tech entrepreneurs at each of these organizations now. So if you look at the Facebook purge that we've been talking about on today's show, so many of these pages were purged overnight. And I find it very hard to believe that the community service people, the people at Facebook and Twitter that make sure they uphold the community terms of service, that they didn't go to the top executives and say, hey guys, we've got 800 pages here that we're ready to purge. Should I go ahead and hit that button? I find it very hard to believe that there wasn't a single person or a small, small group of people at the top of each of these organizations that ultimately made that decision. And then the question is that okay? Are we fine with letting these tech oligarchs decide who can and cannot be heard? And if not, what is the recourse? And if the recourse is that we have to wait and hope that 5 years from now, a competitor to Facebook comes up and somehow doesn't get bought or acquired by Facebook?
Like MeWe.
Yeah, like MeWe, or even the fact Instagram was a direct threat to Facebook, but then Congress allows these giant media conglomerates to acquire more media conglomerates as they come up and become a competitor. And Facebook knows very well who is coming up and stealing traffic away from them, probably even before Congress could keep an eye out for it, or the rest of the market even knows the valuation of these companies should be. So it's easy for Facebook to come swoop in on Instagram as they see Instagram stealing their traffic and say, hey, we're going to buy you for $1 billion, when in reality, if the company had stayed private or stayed at least as its own entity, it would be worth hundreds of billions of dollars today and might have destroyed this kind of weird monopoly that we're experiencing with this Facebook purge.
Well, it's an oligopoly of sorts of control. But again, branches of government and agencies of government are not separate from the big tech sector, as we mentioned earlier. Seed money, tax money, military industrial complex money, surveillance money, NSA money, that was all instrumental going back in the early days of Google. Silicon Valley is no shortage of people that sort of had a real interest in controlling information. The CIA has long been interested in this. In fact, Facebook has been criticized as sort of being one of the most brilliant surveillance platforms ever because we give everything to it and they have proprietary rights over our own lives, our images, etc. It does, however, it seems a little bit problematic whenever government claims that they're not involved in any of this kind of censorship and that that's a private company's decision, when these kinds of private companies are working with government and corporate-funded think tanks like the Atlantic Council, the propaganda arm of NATO. When they are working with these kinds of organizations, they're not objective organizations. They're not third-party in that regard. They have this bizarre symbiotic relationship, and now Facebook is relying on Atlantic Council to tell it what is fake news. So when you see these kinds of purges, it doesn't surprise me, and it doesn't surprise anybody at Project Censored, that these kinds of anti-establishment or sites critical of the status quo, whether they're on the left, like some of the stuff at Mint Press News certainly is, or on the right. The executive director over at the Ron Paul Institute was suspended. So, I mean, it's on both sides of the spectrum.
Right. And speaking about purges, Facebook acquired Instagram and WhatsApp, and those founders who then became absorbed into the Facebook machine have actually, in the last 2 weeks, the co-founders of Instagram have purged themselves and they've left Facebook, leaving millions of dollars on the table. And as well as the co-founders of WhatsApp left even earlier and even created the hashtag delete Facebook. So it's worth noting that these competitor platforms, WhatsApp and Instagram, were bought out by Facebook as soon as the opportunity presented itself, and then they grew under Facebook, and then for whatever reason, there's enough argument or controversy between the original founders of these platforms and Mark Zuckerberg that these founders have walked away from their babies and left millions of dollars of vested equity on the table.
Well, we're certainly not done with this topic, and it seems that as more and more of this kind of action takes place, we see more censorship, more deplatforming, it's certainly going to come up. Recently spoke with journalist Eric Dreitzer, who does Counterpunch Radio as well as Stop Imperialism. He's contributed to Project Censored over the years. Dreitzer, playing devil's advocate, also said, yeah, a lot of these sites are talking about how traffic is down, but to his knowledge, he couldn't point a finger to show where it was something that was specifically being done algorithmically or who was to blame for it, even though Eric Schmidt over at Google said that they would be doing it. But in other words, it's sort of saying like, well, okay, but is this something that we're just repeating over and over again? And if not, who has the actual evidence that this is taking place? and then for what reason? And hopefully we'll be doing a show on this sometime in the coming weeks.
Right. And another thing that you just brought up is these algorithms. Now, a lot of people complain about the algorithms. In reality, we, the audience, decide what algorithms we like, because the ones that we stay on the site longer for are the ones that ultimately become implemented. But it's worth noting that none of these algorithms that decide what we see in the newsfeed are ever shared publicly, and for good reason, because these are private companies that would not want to share their what is essentially their intellectual property. So we're never going to know why we see what we see on these private companies. Social media platforms.
Well, that's very problematic. And at the Project Censored Show, we often end things problematically because there'll be more to discuss later. And of course, we certainly will. So, Chase Palmieri, great to be in conversation here. And I'd like to thank our guest today, Manar Mahawish, as well as Patty Beers. I'd like to remind listeners that not only is this the Project Censored Show, but our latest book, Censored 2019, Fighting the Fake News Invasion by Andy Lee Roth, myself, is out and available. You can learn more at projectcensored.org, published by Seven Stories Press in New York. Again, one of the prime things that Andy and I have been writing about the last couple of books in the so-called post-truth world of alternative facts is that critical media education, critical media literacy education, rather than censorship, blacklist, privatized fact checkers, or legislative bans, is the best weapon for fighting the ongoing fake news invasion. October 26, 27, Media Freedom Summit. Learn more at projectcensored.org. We've got a stellar lineup of people that are going to be helping us fight the fake news invasion, and we'll also be wrapping up some shooting of a fake news documentary that'll be out early next year, so stay tuned for that.
Supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, cause they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign. That's why you hear the same old things they claim, but change never came. It's a dirty game maintained by rain for capital gain.
You've been listening to the Project Censored Show, established in 2010 by Mickey Huff and Peter Phillips. Mickey Huff is executive producer and host of the program, with myself, Chase Palmieri. Anthony Fest is our senior producer, and thanks to our associate producers, Dennis Murphy and Mitch Scorza. The Project Censored Show airs on over 40 stations around the United States, from Maui to New York. To learn more about our work or to find any of our previous archived programs, go to projectcensored.org. Please follow and like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram while we're still there, and be sure to subscribe to the official Project Censored Show on your cell phone's podcast app. Please feel free to share your feedback about our work. Last but not least, thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Political ties, habitual eyes, alibis, disguise, another guy's democracy, politics, the apocalypse, got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison, genocide, wars, fall for little boys, and the weapons manufactured paid for by taxing while the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons, build the capacity, citizens, and the times for the master thief, combine and conquer, steal a masterpiece, open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential fame at the table, then you're probably on the menu. We got that love of the brothers in